Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings with Ted and PK. Are you a skeptic? Are you a doubter? Give us 15 minutes. Your opinion might change.
I want to welcome into our conversation this morning, J. Warner Wallace. He's a cold case homicide detective, a missions leader, and a church planter. And he's been featured on a lot of different TV programs, including Dateline, Fox News, and Court TV. His book is called Cold Case Christianity, and also a brand new booklet, too, that we were looking forward to chatting about this. It's called Alive. It's a cold case approach to the resurrection. Good morning, Jim.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Good morning to you. My throat's a little bit, as you know, it's early out here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So my throat's a little raw, so good.
No problem. Jim, you know, just to give our listeners a little background on your story, you haven't always been a Christian. You were an atheist. Is that right?
Yeah, I was a pretty committed unbeliever until about 35 years of age. And I really wasn't somebody who had a lot of respect for Christians because I didn't think they ever grounded what they believed in evidence. And especially the cops I knew who were Christians, they typically couldn't even offer me a good evidential reason for why they were Christians, although they had a really high regard for evidence in their professional lives. So I was really kind of stuck in a place where I thought, you know, if I don't have some good reason to believe this is true, I'm sorry, I don't need another piece of baggage or another thing in my pocket. I just need to have the truth. And if it's not true, I just didn't want any part of it.
So you kind of got drugged to church. Tell us about that experience, just as kind of a little backstory here about how you made that transition and what you heard that day.
Yeah, you know, I was the kind of guy, like my own father, who's still an atheist, I would have been more than happy to go to church with my family if that's what my wife wanted to do. Not all the time, but I mean, on occasion, I was willing to go, and for holidays, those kinds of things. And I would stay quiet. I mean, wouldn't be a jerk about it, but this particular, we had been in this neighborhood for about 3 years, I guess, and I had not attended any church service with my family, and my wife would want to go on holidays. And so as a result, my family just didn't go. They just didn't go. And so 3 years in, we're sitting here, and my kids were very young, and my wife said, let's go to church tomorrow. And I was open to it just to be dutiful. I was happy to go.
Being a good husband and dad that you were,
yeah,
right?
And it was the first time, really, we'd ever set foot in a non-Catholic mass, because she was raised Catholic. And so she was kind of cultural Catholic. And we walked into this evangelical church, a huge mega church in our neighborhood here. And it turns out this pastor pitched Jesus in a way that I really hadn't thought of him before. It kind of is an ancient sage, wise person. And I would have said, okay, I'm willing to entertain his words like you would any ancient, you know, Buddha, Baha'u'llah, and anybody who claims to have some proverbial wisdom. So I was willing to sit down and listen to the red letters, but I was not interested in Jesus as God. That's for sure. I didn't believe in anything supernatural. So I just bought my first Bible as a way of kind of mining out and stealing the wisdom of this ancient, you know, time-vetted, prophet, or not prophet so much as a way, you know, wise sage. And that was really my limited interest in Jesus, at least initially.
And then as you went on, and you talk about this in the booklet Alive as well, the cold case approach to the resurrection, you used abductive reasoning. What is that, and how did you use it?
Well, I mean, all of us do this. I mean, we don't even realize we're doing it. We walk into a situation and we form what I call, you know, two mental lists in your head. I call them the E-lists. I'm not sure if I mentioned that in the live, but I've been doing this for years in my investigative work. The first E-list is evidence. The second E-list is explanations. And you just and we do this all the time. If your kids say, hey, I'm 15 minutes late because, I ran out of gas. Well, you're going to start to form a list of evidences and a list of explanations, and you're going to try to figure out which of those explanations is most reasonable in light of the evidence. And that's what we do at every crime scene, every death scene. We investigate it to say, hey, is this even a homicide? Because there's four ways to die, and we're going to look at the list of evidence in the room and decide which of those four ways is most reasonable given the evidence. We do the same thing when we're trying to identify a suspect. Well, you can do the same thing when looking at the evidence for the resurrection and the explanations that have been offered for the resurrection, because let's face it, I mean, I would have taken one of maybe five or six explanations offered by unbelievers. You know, this is either a lie, this is either an exaggeration over time, this is either, you know, he didn't really die on the cross. I mean, all the kind of traditional, we were kind of familiar with these. I mean, I think Josh McDowell did a great job in his book years ago, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, of kind of laying these out. But I think those are really the only explanations available to us. We have to look at those explanations and see which one works best which one has the least number of liability. By the way, every explanation has a liability. I don't care if it, even the truth has liabilities in front of a jury. You've got to, you know, there's always unanswered questions. There's always things that will trip you up. And so I'll try to be just straightforward about those, even for the Christian explanations, and look at those liabilities and say which one has the greatest virtues and the least liabilities. And that's what I tried to do in that booklet.
We're talking with Jim Wallace this morning, and his book is Cold Case Christianity, and we're looking at a booklet that he has called Alive. And Jim, I just have to say before we go to break here really quick that I'm so glad that you weren't my dad.
Same thing.
Wouldn't be able to pull one over on you.
Yeah, it's hard to pull one over when you're a detective. That's true.
We'll be back with more with Jim Wallace in just a moment. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings.
Back here now at Faith Radio Mornings, our guest is Jim Wallace, who is a cold case detective. He's worked in that field for some years, and he's also used those skills to write the book Cold Case Christianity, a homicide detective investigates the claims of the Gospels, and also the booklet titled Alive. Thanks for being with us again, Jim.
Well, thanks for having me. You know, you mentioned how there's some virtues of being a detective and how it drives your kids crazy. There's a downside, too. You can, whenever I'm missing something in the house and I say, has anybody seen this or that? They'll just scream at me, you're the detective. You figure it out. So, you know, there's a downside to having that skill set.
Right.
So,
anyway. Nice.
Well, can you just maybe highlight for us maybe one evidence that to you just seemed to be irrefutable as you were just going through this progression from being an atheist and then just really examining the scriptures? I love that it's a cold, you know, a cold case, if you will, because it happened so long ago. But what was something that just seemed to be so obvious to you in the evidence side of things?
Well, I think we have some minimal evidence in the room that most of us, even as skeptics, would probably submit. I mean, and I think that one of those was, for me, I never doubted the existence of a guy named Jesus. I just doubted that he was who, you know, history has claimed him to be or Christians have claimed him to be. But so the existence of Jesus was non-controversial for me, even though some people now will try to, you know, these real serious skeptics will try to doubt he ever. But even someone like Bart Ehrman, who is agnostic at best and probably really honestly worse than agnostic on the issue of Jesus, he would not deny the existence of Jesus. And one of the other things I wouldn't have denied is that the folks who claimed to see him risen from the dead made these claims. And as I examined the case, they made these claims early. And so you have the early claims of folks who, and I think history also demonstrates, at the very least suffered for their claims. Many were martyred for their claims. None of them profited from their claims. And when you see this kind of thing, it's really powerful. Now, look, all of us would say, even today as Christians, many of us would say, I'm willing to die for what I believe about Jesus. But we aren't in a position as eyewitnesses to know, from an eyewitness perspective, what actually happened. We are trusting the reliable eyewitness record, but the folks who actually saw it with their own eyes, if those folks were willing to die for what they believe rather than ever recant, and by the way, we've got good document evidence in the early centuries of Christendom that believers who weren't eyewitnesses often, you know, relinquished their belief in Jesus to survive. You know, they would bow down to the gods of Rome. Mm-hmm. We see Pliny the Younger writing to Trajan and saying, hey, I've got people here who will recant. You see no evidence at all of any of the eyewitnesses, though, ever recanting. And that is something that's very powerful. I felt to be very, very powerful because I see it all the time. To be honest, even my family is all atheists, and I have several Mormons in my family. And the Mormons, if you look at the claims of Mormonism, they don't hold up. The original eyewitnesses of the Golden Plates, for example, either were chased out of the church or left the church voluntarily at some point in their life. When you see people will walk away from a prior truth claim, that's very powerful. It tells you something about the nature of their claim. When you see people are willing to die for the nature of their truth claim, that's something very powerful also.
Let's say we're maybe on an airplane and we have a limited amount of time, but we do have some time, and we get into a conversation with a stranger and realize they're atheist, but we want to be able to explain the faith and defend the faith. Do you have any kind of a go-to place to start for that?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to the resurrection. I mean, this is what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 anyway, and this is what you see the original eyewitnesses, the apostles, doing in the book of Acts. They're going to make their claims about Christianity based on their eyewitness observation of the resurrection. It always comes down to this. And so I think for me, I typically start there. What I try to do is this. I try to make clear, though, to people, because I think most people don't think we as Christians are rational. And to be honest, if you go around the country and ask Christians, why are you a Christian, you often get responses that aren't evidentially based. You know, I was raised in the church. I believe that God is active in my life. Okay, that's good. That's good. But so do Mormons. Mormons also believe that. I believe I've got a relationship with Jesus. I see change in my life. Well, so do Mormons. Mormons also see those kinds of things. So I would ask, well, what is the real – so what separates you then from other groups that even claim a stake in Jesus? But maybe we would say that's not evidentially true. I think in the end, we need to be able to tell the world around us, I'm not a Christian because it works for me. I'm not a Christian because I was raised in the church or had a bunch of friends who were Christians. I'm not a Christian because I have a hope of heaven, to be honest with you. I'm not a Christian because I have a need, a God-shaped hole I'm trying to fill, or I'm trying to transform my crummy life and make it better. That's not any of the reasons why I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian simply because it's true. And as I examined the case for the resurrection, I found that the most reasonable inference from the minimal evidence of the empty tomb, of people who died for their claim, of people who claim that Jesus rose from the dead very early, within the generation of people who would have known better, as Paul says, there are 500 who are still out there, you could ask. They saw the risen Jesus. The best, most reasonable inference from the evidence for me, if I would simply relinquish my bias against the supernatural, was that Jesus actually rose from the dead. And that changes the entire game. Remember, a lot of us think the liability, as non-Christians, think the liability of the Christian explanation is simply that it requires something supernatural to be true, and we reject that out of hand. But remember, that's the thing under investigation to begin with. You can't begin an investigation with a decision about your suspect. You let the evidence point you to the suspect. And we can't begin this investigation with a bias against the supernatural. We have to leave that on the shelf and let the evidence take us where it does.
Jim, in your booklet Alive, you take a couple different angles, too, for instance, that the disciples were wrong about Jesus' death and that he just survived everything and just simply showed up a couple days later. Now, are these things that you wondered as you were just investigating personally, or are these things that you were hearing from others?
Yeah, I had a couple that were really big for me. The one that was really the biggest for me is the idea that this was a legend that grew over time. Because I thought, I didn't deny that, even if he died on that cross, I mean, that this is something that I would have said, well, look, I think what I know about conspiracy theory, I talk about it in the booklet too, I just think conspiracies are very difficult to pull off. They require five things to really be successful. I don't think those five things exist in the first century for the apostles. But so for me, it wasn't so much the kind of what we call the swoon theory, the idea that he didn't die on the cross, or so much even the conspiracy theory ideas. It was really that this has to be a late legend that develops beyond the lifetime of the original eyewitnesses or outside the region. So if you're going to tell this lie, or this is going to be a legend's going to develop over legendary tales, it has to develop late in history outside of the eyewitnesses who could tell you something different, or it has to develop outside the region so that no one is around to really know what happened. And I think as you investigate the scriptures, you're going to find that they are not only early, there's good reason to believe they are written right within the region. They seem to understand all the particulars of the region, they even use the correct proper nouns of the most popular Jewish names, not in Egypt, but in South Africa, or North Africa rather, or in Rome. I mean, the folks who wrote the Gospels happen to know what the most popular Jewish names are in the very region in the first century where these events took place. There are good reasons to believe this is an early document written in the region, which makes it much harder to explain if it's a lie, if it's a late exaggeration. This is much more difficult to explain if it's written early and in the region.
Our guest again today is Jim Warner Wallace. He's author of Cold Case Christianity, A Homicide Detective Investigates the Claims of the Gospels, and also the booklet Alive, A Cold Case Approach to the Resurrection. Links for these will be up at myfaithradio.com. In closing, the last minute here, Jim, when you engage with atheists, what has that been like for you? Do you get some pushback? Do you see conversions take place?
Yeah, you know, I tell you, I always tell people, we sometimes think we're playing a game of tennis, you know, where it's just us and the other person we're trying to reach. It's all on us. The lights are on. We're on the clay court. ESPN is watching. If we make one mistake, it's out of bounds. We lose the point, you know. Mm-hmm. But really, this is a game of baseball. We all come up as part of a team. I don't have to swing for the fences every time. I just need to get on base, make contact with the ball. If you're talking to people who are non-believers, it's not always all on you in that one conversation. You don't know who already has been talking talking to this person. You don't know where they stand around the bases. They may not be. They may still be at home plate. They may be at third, leaning in toward home. It may not take much for you to drive them home. So I always tell people, be modest in your approach. Let God do the work, and understand that we're not playing a game of tennis. We're part of a baseball team. Mm-hmm. Just get on base with people. Address their objections. You don't have to always go all the way home.
We've been talking this morning with Jim Warner Wallace and the book Cold Case Christianity. We've talked about that before. And the newest edition, it's called Alive, a nice little booklet. And it's a cold case approach to the resurrection, just giving us some wonderful ways that we can respond to skeptics and maybe even gain some confidence as we're trying to defend the reality of the resurrection.
Now, you've done all the heavy lifting for us, Jim. Thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate you guys having me on. Even this early in the morning, I was delighted to be with you guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Great to have you.
We'll link up your website as well. Cold Case Christianity. That'll be up at myfaithradio.com.